listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hi everyone, I'm Henry, and I'd like to invite you to listen to Fortress on a Hill on KBOO Portland. My co-hosts and I are three leftist veterans that aim to expose the reality of the U.S. military's multiple wars abroad and illuminate the damage military service does to Americans and foreign citizens around the world. How can we stand by and do nothing while our military kills and destroys the lives the world over, while telling Americans that all this death and destruction protects them from terrorists, when nothing could be more false? Fortress on a Hill aims to change that. You can listen to us at 9 a.m. on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month right here on KBOO. And thanks.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. We have a wonderful program today. We're going to talk about the Sunrise Project, Sunrise Beaverton. The Sunrise Project, according to notes on the web, is a small national organization with, again, according to the Post, an oversized impact. And certainly in Beaverton, we've seen quite an impact. The project is driven nationally by a passion to solve the climate crisis. They state, quote, "We are a team of experienced campaigners, analysts, and communications professionals with a mission to scale social movements to drive the transition beyond fossil fuels," end quote. Today, we welcome three representatives from the Beaverton affiliate who will introduce themselves in just a minute. Then we'll learn more about the organization locally, their achievements, and future plans. Welcome, guests. Would you please give a brief introduction, just a line or two, so the listeners know who we're talking with?
Hi, I'm Dia. I'm a high schooler in Beaverton, and I helped start the Sunrise Beaverton Hub in August 2019, I think.
Great, thank you. Amy.
So Dee and I started the Hub together in August last year, and I just wanted to say quickly that it's called the Sunrise Movement, not the Sunrise Project.
Okay, thank you.
So the national organization is called the Sunrise Movement, and we're called Sunrise Beaverton. And we're a hub of the organization, and the Sunrise Movement is a pretty organic process, I feel. They support local organizers to start doing work in their community. So that's what Dean and I took up the call to do, because we believed in the mission of the Green New Deal and the work of the Sunrise Movement. So that's how we got started.
Thank you, Amy. I still want to hear from Pedro, but you've answered our first question already, too. So thank you. Pedro, would you mind saying a word or two about yourself?
Yes, my name is Pedro. I've been living in Beaverton for 5 years now, and I met Amy and Dia at the climate protest outside of City Hall in, I think, November of 2019, and I've been a part of the Hub ever since. And yeah, like Amy was saying, the Sunrise Movement National is very organic. It's a youth-led movement, and they give us the tools and training to make change in our communities.
You guys have made it pretty clear about what National does. How would you describe the relationship that you have between this National movement and Sunshine Beaverton? Do they monitor your activities and need to approve them, or are you quite independent as the Hub?
Well, we function under the Sunrise Principles. There are 12 principles that we like all agree to operate under. And then beyond those principles, there is like obviously the national movement to nationally endorse campaigns and politicians. But more locally, we understand that the climate crisis crosses all of our borders and affects people all over the world and affects different communities differently. So a lot of the work that we do has to do with like bringing the Green New Deal home to Beaverton, to the Pacific Northwest more broadly, and understanding like what our role in the future of climate change and solving these issues looks like. And then there's trainings that the national movement provides. There's also different like advocacy groups, like Dia's been a part of the Justice, Equity, and Anti-Oppression group. There's also a like multi-languages groups. So one of the projects that Sunrise just launched, or I guess one of the wings that they launched, is the Somos Sunrise, which is bringing the Green New Deal to the Latinx community and Spanish speakers, and just trying to connect the dots or bring more solidarity within communities.
And that's nationally. Are you guys doing the same thing locally?
So we can plug into all of these groups nationally and spread the work here. So we don't really get monitored by national. There's just guidelines that we all agree to work under, and we have check-in calls with national. It's not like a top-down organization, but more of a bottom-up organization where all of the hubs have inputs, can be a part of the leadership programs within the many different groups and wings of the Sunrise Movement. And yeah, we all like participate in our own capacity.
It sounds like a classic top-up organization or grassroots organization. I understand that the national group raises money and also distributes grants. Do you guys get grants from the national group?
We have recently started looking at their financial offerings and have signed up for, they have something called Role Networks is what one of the names for some of the things that Pedro was talking about. So there's one called the Finance Role Network.
You know, you guys, in my own research, you have a very, very strong social media presence. And in my experience as doing some social media stuff, that usually requires a fair amount of money as well as skill. I respect and commend your skill, but how do you raise the money that you have if you so far haven't got any financial support from national?
Honestly, we so far have been able to get by just using the resources that we have. One thing that's been really helpful is having allies, like other community organizations that can help us out. Like if we need, or let's say a climate strike or something, we need supplies, like we need a megaphone or extra poster board for making signs. They usually can help us out with getting supplies. And as far as social media goes, it's really just our core team running it. We haven't really needed any or run into any needs for financing for that.
Good. Well, I do appreciate that you likely have much more skill with social media than I do. But one more time, it's what I've seen on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, the only three that I take a look at, has been consistent, persistent, and clear with your message. I think that's really great. You know, climate change was the apparent motivating factor to form the national movement. Locally, you folks have weighed in on climate, police issues, Black Lives Matter protests, and more. What are Sunrise Beaverton's goals?
Tackling climate change is such a big one, you know, and like I said earlier, like the climate crisis crosses many borders and intersects with a lot of different issues. Climate is not just about, you know, polar bears and shrinking ice caps, but it has to do with health, has to do with safety, it has to do with racial justice. There is, I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with the term, but environmental racism is a term coined to like bring together the intersections of the climate change and racial injustice. So we're always like working towards these things, like trickle down and show up in our communities in many different ways. So I guess we're like always trying to chip away at the edge of all these different intersections. And I think that's why we've, especially after the George Floyd murder at the end, beginning of the summer, like we saw that there was a lot of movement there and a lot of work to be won there too. So that was a big motivating factor for really like focusing on that work. But goals, like we understand that like in Beaverton, we need a climate emergency declaration and a climate advisory council. And we weren't getting anywhere close to that with our elected officials. And then we just had a big election. So we put a lot of energy into this election too and building coalitions over the summer to, like I said earlier, like chip away at some of the injustices all around us. And we were able to, while we're still like working on some of the goals around like policing and reallocation of funds and getting SROs out of schools, we have seen some like really awesome progressive wins in Washington County, Oregon State, and Beaverton as well. So I think like we're looking to see how we can build off of the work that we've done in the last year and some of these big wins. So I guess our goals are like constantly moving targets.
I sort of get that, but I get them from what you're saying that there's so much intertwined between so many important issues. I certainly understand the racial inequity, environmentalism issue, as well as access to healthcare. I get that it's all kind of a jumble, and as long as you're clear with your messages on each topic, I don't see that as an issue. But what I would like to discuss with you guys for just a moment is tactics. There was a time Pedro managed to give the current Beaverton mayor a difficult time on tape and get media coverage in the election where you actively supported his opponent. I think it's called bird dogging. In social media, one of your posts that I see often uses a flattering and unflattering picture of our county chair to make your point, and you do make your point. My question is, where do you draw the line for activism? Do you advocate working within the processes set up for citizen input? Or do you force your message into the dialogue without an invitation to participate?
I think for us, the process is really at first trying to get your input in the traditional way that citizens are given opportunities to have their message be heard, which would mean, you know, testifying at various city council meetings and board meetings and things like that. But sure, at a certain point, I think we were testifying at lots of different, well, especially Beaverton City Council meetings, but also other various listening sessions held by Washington County and just other meetings. And just our message was really not being heard, and we were just being ignored by our elected officials. And so at that point, we kind of decided, well, we need to make our voice heard. And so that might mean having to go outside of just elected officials and maybe try and get some media coverage. And just try and get more public attention to kind of raise awareness for the issue. And so I think that's where a lot of the bird dogging tactics started coming up, was just from, you know, realizing, oh, just trying to get our message heard by elected officials is not working because they're ignoring us.
We want people to listen, and we'll do what we need to within limits, of course, to get the attention. If I may turn to Pedro and Amy, what limits might you put on your own organization's activities? I'm not suggesting you would do anything to hurt people, but where do you draw that line between, hey, we really need to get heard, and whoa, just a minute, we don't want to like step over the boundaries here?
So like the bird dogging and like the memes of our elected officials and the videos that we've produced is just one of the many tactics that we have as an organization. And while that might be like the more like maybe some unflavorful or unpleasant for some people to see, and it's also very forward facing and draws a lot of attention for reasons that Dia described, we also do a lot of education within ourselves. We do a lot of anti-racist work within ourselves. We try to also do a lot of education with the community. We've done reading groups, social justice reading groups. We've attended and supported protests like the bird dogging and the social media flaming of some of these elected officials. That is just one of the many tactics that we have. And I'll let Amy take it from there.
To me, like, I feel like the flaming's not even that big of a flaming. Like, there's no attention. Nice. There's literally no media in Beaverton. So, like, to post a meme about Catherine Harrington on Facebook, I don't see it as a big deal. But anyways, so Sunrise Principles, I just wanted to read to you principle number 4. As Patrick said before, like, we all agree to these principles. And number 4 is we're nonviolent in word and deed. So the movement.
Thank you. I didn't.
Principle nonviolent movement. The first one is that we're a movement to stop climate change and create millions of good jobs in the process. Mm-hmm. And so racial justice and equity, that was always at the center of the Green New Deal and the movement for of the Sunrise Movement. And then after the murder of George Floyd, we're like, okay, well, we're doing this in a whitewashed way. Like, we need to really be making sure that this is a real part of the overall work. And so that's, I think, when, especially within our hub, at least, that became central to our goals of working on defunding the police locally. And so to get off of the principles for just 1 second, I just want to plug that we started a coalition here locally, which is called the Fund the People Coalition, where we have other folks who have similar goals to reallocate money from policing structures which are racist and violent and harm our community members into the social services that we actually need. And we saw that Beaverton removed funding from, like, across the board except the police department in this new budgeting cycle, and same thing happened in Washington County. So so what we're saying is we need different priorities for our communities. Our priority is funding the people and the social services and not policing people. When people have what they need, then police become a lot less relevant. And they're also not qualified to do a lot of the things that are being put upon them. So then we're also interested in models like the CAHOOTS program. And that's something we've been asking for within Beaverton and also Washington County, or a street response team, something like that. I don't know if Pedro and DM, like, going off on the rails here and talking about more, but there's a whole list of principles. And I just wanted to say specifically because you were, like, alluding to whether you thought we were violent or not, and we're a nonviolent movement.
And Amy, thank you very much for going through those principles, especially the one about nonviolence, et cetera. I was not trying to suggest that you were violent. I was just trying to get an understanding of where your boundaries were. And thank you. You did that very, very well. You folks have been keeping this movement going at least since August 2019, if I'm following right. I've seen many meaningful youth movements start well but peter out. How do you and how will you keep your members enthused and involved over time?
That's a good question, and it's definitely one that we're trying to figure out as we go right now. We've seen sort of since the summer, there's been, like, sort of a decline in enthusiasm with a lot of the people that we work with. So that's one thing that we've kind of been considering ourselves. And I think especially right now with the pandemic and everything, it can be easy to get burnt out doing this type of work. But I think that there's always ways to kind of bring your hub or, you know, whatever organization back together, and try to reunite, whether that's maybe having like a 101 meeting or a regrouping meeting, coming up with new goals, maybe that are more specific or easier to reach to work on, things like that.
Understood. Thank you. Amy, Pedro, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think the burnout definitely gets real. And, you know, we're living through, like, extraordinary times with, like, the election, the pandemic, you know, and then also to do this work, like we said, for free. And it's also, we think, some of the most important work being done. It's about the, you know, like, I've grown up with the climate crisis, like, front of mind for 22 years now. And to see that we haven't really made any progress. If anything, we went back. And there's been more disinformation and less like media attention to these things. It can get really hard and really difficult for a lot of us to keep the energy alive. But what I really appreciate about like Sunrise is their theory for change, or theory of change. And like solidarity is one big aspect of it. And understanding that we need like a movement of movements to bring around bring about real change and to pressure politicians to do the right thing and take young people and Black, Indigenous people of color in mind and at the center of all their decisions. And what's been good to see since, you know, like you said, Sunrise is a very young organization. I think, like, while we might feel burnout, like, here within, like, being on the floor and doing this work every day, it's also good to, like, step back and see all the big wins that, like, we have had in our city, our county, and nationally. Politicians like Jamal Bowman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the entire squad, Ed Markey defending his seat on the East Coast, climate policy, like, smart climate policy being passed in different parts of the country. And then here in, like, Washington County, all six of the elected officials that not only we endorse, but Washington County Ignite endorsed, like, all won their seats. And that was just with, like, us and, you know, obviously some awesome grassroots campaign, but the little bit of agitating and organizing we feel has made a difference in our community. And, you know, we have to, like, reexamine our capacity every once in a while, but we always come back because we're passionate, we have a good message, and, you know, we've made our wins and we're going to keep making wins.
And one way to keep people involved and engaged is to keep talking about your successes. In my experience, people, whether they're young or old, prefer to be involved in an organization that is doing things successfully rather than struggling, and no matter how good the intent is. So as you talk about your successes, I hope that the people that are involved and the people that you're reaching out to will be able to see them. You guys are trying to affect change in the political world, which I think is great. You're recruiting young people. On other programs, Inside Washington County has talked with guests and noted the virtual absence of civic education in schools. Has that helped or hindered your recruitment efforts?
I don't know. I hadn't really put that two and two together. Like, we know that civics, that's actually something we've had as part of our teach-ins. We've had a little section that's like Civics 101. And when we talked about defunding the police, I, like, this is Beaverton's website, and this is when their meeting times are, and these are the people who's on the city council. And so, like, we've recognized that that is something that the city is in, I feel like, almost maybe, like, intentionally bad at. They don't want people to really be involved. I wouldn't blame it all on the schools. I wouldn't. I mean, but yeah, the 101, the civics is not very good in schools. And then two, like, things about the culture and also youth movements. The Sunrise Movement, at least at the beginning of this year, we're not planning to exist for more than 5 years. So it's intended to be a project to get the Green New Deal, to launch the Green New Deal, a decade of the Green New Deal. But then the thing that makes me keep coming back is the culture also of the group. There's a lot of, like, the visual culture is really good, but then also there's songs, and there's energy and excitement within the organization. And one of the principles is, even we shine bright. There are hard days and sad days, to be sure. This isn't easy work, but we strive to bring a spirit of positivity and hope to everything we do. Changing the world is a fulfilling and joyful process, and we let that show. So I think, to me, like, that, if that wasn't there and I wasn't able to, like, sing awesome songs. Not that it's that much part of our hub, but I have been exposed to some of the songs that Sunrise Movement has, and that's like I sing it to myself to like get myself through the day sometimes. So I think the culture is a big thing. But anybody else, like the civics, do you think that prevented people from getting involved?
Quick thank you for like bringing up the We Shine Bright principle and like mentioning like the culture. I really have loved that about Sunrise too. And like whether or not it's like gotten people like involved in the movement, like it's something that we bring to the work that we do is like the civic education and also movement history, because there's hundreds of years of like movements that struggled for what's right and for like racial progress and climate progress in this country, and that a lot of us don't know about. And it's good to like be reminded of that education and pull from those lessons in the work that we do here locally.
I mean, about the civics, yeah, I would definitely agree with Amy that it's a two-part issue. I think it does need to be taught better in schools. In my experience, it's basically not taught at all. I didn't really know anything about local governments or the way that they worked or anything about my local government until I got involved with Sunrise. So yes, definitely that. But then also for young people, it's harder. The city or local governments are much less accessible. Just because I think of like the different types of social media that are used and how young people connect, particularly online, versus how city governments use outreach.
Yeah. By all means, understood. Thank you. If folks want to join Sunrise Beaverton, I know that there's an age limit. You have to be under 35. I've learned that. But how would they go about connecting with you if they're listening to this program or they hear about it? How would they say, hey, I want to get involved? Who would they talk to? How would they reach out?
They would either reach out on social media if they've seen us on there, or they could email us, is mostly how we...
And that email contact would be?
It is beavertonsunrise@gmail.com. And then on Facebook, you can find us at Sunrise Beaverton. And on Twitter, we are the Beaverton Hub. So at Beaverton Hub, H-U-B. And let me pull up our Instagram real quick, too.
Also Sunrise Beaverton, because I typed in recently.
It's just there we go. Yeah. So Facebook and Instagram, Sunrise Beaverton. Twitter, at Beaverton Hub. And our Gmail is beavertonsunrise@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also check out the Sunrise Movement's website, sunrisemovement.org. On their front page, there's an interactive map where you can zoom in throughout the country and see all the different hubs that are located in the country.
Cool. Dia, Pedro, Amy, wanted to thank you very much for joining us today. And my last question, is there anything that you'd like our listeners to know about the movement that I haven't asked? Anything at all? I just didn't think to ask something that you guys think is important that I might have missed.
We're fighting for the decade of the Green New Deal, and we hope that if you're listening to this and if you're anywhere in Washington County or west of Portland, that you reach out to us and get involved in one way or another.
Amy, Pedro, Dia, thank you so much for joining us. That's our guests are from Sunrise Beaverton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
After today, Inside Washington County will go on hiatus. Rick and I would like to thank Donald Benham, KUIK Radio, KBOO Radio, our podcast subscribers, all of our listeners, and most especially our guests. We have logged over 40 programs in the past 18 months. We've brought you key issues and key people to discuss them. They are currently available on the website insidewashco.org. We've enjoyed this opportunity, and a deep personal thank you from me to my departing colleague, Rick Paulson. The combination of Rick's technical skills and commitment to supporting our community is impressive to say the least. Thank you, Rick. To our listeners, thank you for your support. We might be back.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Today on Wings, COVID and the work of journalists in East Africa.
About how I balance my work and home. As a freelance journalist, most of the time I work from the house. And for me, I know when to work and when to attend to my family. So
there's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and